Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We will proceed to the sixth case of the day, Shearer versus Potter. Ms. Sticks.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a Rehabilitation Act case for a federal government employee. Summary judgment was granted for the defendant, the United States Postal Service. The question in this case is whether Mr. Shearer was disabled under the Rehabilitation Act, that is, whether he was substantially limited in a major life activity. The record shows that a reasonable jury could find that he was. Mr. Shearer is a mentally depressed diabetic who couldn't stand, couldn't walk, couldn't feel his feet, couldn't feel feet injuries, he couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, and he couldn't have sex. But he had to make major dietary changes, and he had major diet restrictions. He had to give himself insulin injections twice a day. He had to monitor his blood sugar at least twice a day. He had to take medications to sleep, and he had to inject himself in order to have sexual relations. The record is filled with evidence that Mr. Shearer was substantially limited in several major life activities, and the district court's ignoring that evidence does not eliminate it from the record. A reasonable jury could easily find that Mr. Shearer was disabled under the Rehabilitation Act, and this case belongs before a jury.
He officially requested an accommodation on January 13th, although he had told his employer about his purported disability sometime in December of the and then the post office hires additional help on April 5th. So I suppose that's a little less than 4 months from the report of the problem until the solution. What amount of time is do you think is reasonable for an employer with an elaborate hiring protocol to fill a position?
My client had actually asked for the accommodation on December 9th. That's when he sent a letter to his supervisor saying, "I can hardly stand at the end of the day. I'm a diabetic, and I need additional help." And he actually went to the EEO office to file a complaint on January 13th because of the deadlines that are required under the federal scheme of 45 days after something occurs. His supervisor called him within a couple of days of his December 9th request and told him a clerk would not be given to him for assistance. It wasn't until he complained three additional times in March and actually showed her his heel injuries. He sent pictures of his heel injuries to his supervisor, and at that point, the post office allowed him to hire a PMR, which during the supervisor's deposition said all he had to do was ask for a PMR and he could have hired one. But no one ever told him that all he had to do was ask and he could hire one. He was told he would not be getting a clerk, and that was in December of 2002. So I don't know if that answers your question, but their failure to accommodate him when he asked for it in December led to serious complications with his diabetes.
Well, when this replacement clerk came on, wasn't that after the post office learned that his doctor had limited his work day to four hours a day? And he, prior to that, he was not under that restriction, correct?
Correct.
I understand you're saying the photo was shown, but I mean, I think that is somewhat of a problem for you in that the doctor says 4 hours a day. After that date, the post office responds. Prior to that, he doesn't have the medical documentation to support. I mean, I understand he's made the request, but isn't this really about lessening sort of his workload and making it a little easier for him versus what occurred you know, in April once he got the doctor's?
Well, the doctor's excuse came in March. But in December, when he requested that he get an accommodation, he informed his – I don't think the law requires him to have a medical excuse under the Rehabilitation Act for the interactive process to begin. And I think once he told a supervisor he was diabetic and needed assistance, that she could have come and said, I need additional information to assist you in your request.
Once he submitted the doctor's note that said he was to work only 4 hours a day, was he able to reduce his work day immediately, or did he have to wait until Diane Kelly began working?
He submitted his report, and he had to wait until April 5th when she actually came on board.
Is he still only working 4 hours a day?
After his amputation, he was able to come back full-time. That resolved part of his major illness, and he has been working full-time after August of 2003.
See, what I'm wondering about is what his damages are. I mean, in other words, is he arguing that he wouldn't have lost his foot had they responded sooner?
He's arguing that that's a possibility, that had he been able to get the kind of attention that he needed for himself during January, during February, during the remainder of December, that he may have been able to reduce the effects of his diabetes. He would have been able to get off his feet and take care of himself. But instead, in February, the Postal Service does a mail count where they evaluate the post offices, and he was required to be there full-time and is the only person in that office.
You know, I think you answered this, but I've got to get it absolutely clear in my head. He submits the doctor's note that he can only work 4 hours a day. How long after that was his work day reduced?
He submitted the doctor's note on approximately March 15th, and Diane Kelly was allowed to transfer on April 5th.
March 15th, April 5th, about 3 weeks.
And you're sure that wasn't the 15th the day that he writes requesting help and he encloses the pictures, but it was the 21st when Wilson gave him the medical restriction?
21st of March?
Right. Because I want that date clarified as well.
I will have to look in the record. It may have been March 21st. I thought it was March 15th when he sent the... That's what then triggered the response
and then,
from the supervisor.
Because the dates I have is then 4 days later. I have Wilson gave the medical restriction to work 4 hours a day on the 21st, and then the 25th I have is the date the supervisor allowed Kelly to transfer effective April 5th. That's the sort of the date scenario I have. So it's a fairly small window.
That's possible.
And was he able to work 4 hours a day from March 25th to April 5th when she arrives?
No. He had to continue working.
So about 11 days, right?
Correct.
So for 11 days, he had to
provide
continue.
Coverage.
And so is that what you're saying is the window of damages?
Our argument is that the damages begin in December when he requests an accommodation and is not provided the accommodation, or is not even provided a response from his supervisor that begins the interactive process. Because on December 9th, he writes his supervisor a letter saying, I have diabetes, I can't stand at the end of the day, I need additional help in the office.
So really the essence of your argument is that the district court really didn't consider the progressive and deteriorating nature of his condition, but when we take that to its logical conclusion, aren't we in a situation where any individual with a progressive disease could claim there was a disability at any point in time because, you know, the condition was likely to get worse? You know, I'm trying to come up with some, you know, rule or some way we can, because this is kind of an amorphous thing that it makes it very difficult to apply. Because that is your argument, though, is his condition worse? And, you know, at what point do we have the disability, I guess? Or maybe you could shed some light on that for me.
It's our argument that at the point he requested, again, in December, additional assistance, that raised a duty by the Postal Service to come to him and say, I need additional medical documentation. I'm not by his supervisor. I don't have enough information to say, yes, you can have additional help, or no, you can't. You don't need an additional help. I need medical documentation for that. She did not do that. So he was not able at that time get the time to take off to go to the Veterans Administration hospital an hour and a half from work and get that information. He didn't even know he needed it because it wasn't asked for.
Was he eligible for any medical leave during any of this period of time when you say he couldn't get off from work?
He's eligible.
What if he were in an auto accident? I know it's a one-person operation in a small community. What if you were in an auto accident? What would be? How does that work in the Postal Department?
I'm not very clear on how that would work. I assume that somebody would relate to somebody higher up that he had been in an automobile accident.
Well, he must have time off of work to go to the doctor, right? Over these doctor's hours after work, the visits to Dr. Finch?
The visits to Dr. Finch were pre-planned. When he was able, he had to call around for coverage at the surrounding post offices. So when he was able to get an appointment, he would call around. If somebody could cover for him, he could make the appointment. There actually was a time in February after he discovered the ulcers that he had made an appointment. He couldn't get coverage for his office, and he had to work that day, which put his appointment with the physician off another month.
Thank you, Ms. Dix. Mr. Elke?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Stephen Elke, and I was counsel below for the United States. In answer at least to the last question, I think one of the records that's important to look at is found in the record 16, page 30. That's the record of index, and that is a letter from Ms. Bischke. She's the supervisor to Mr. Scheer, and in there she talks about requests for notifications of absence or sick leave. And in checking the file, it indicates that he had been granted 100% authorization for all days requested within the past year, also in her deposition, which is...
And what was the date of that?
The date of that letter is March 25th, 2003, Your Honor, and that is a letter from Ms. Bischke to Mr. Scheer. That's also the letter where she confirms receipt of some recent correspondence and says that he'll be allowed to have a postmaster replacement as of April 5th. But I want to...
And let me just ask you, just so I'm clear on the record, too. Prior to that, his March 5th request asking that Kelly be transferred as a replacement employee, was there anything in writing that he submitted to his supervisor, Bischke?
Yes, Your Honor. There are a number of letters, and there's references in Ms. Bischke's deposition transcript to conversations. And one thing that is not 100% clear in the briefs, and I apologize for that, but which I think you need to know looking at this is there are two different, clerk is sort of a generic term. There's a career clerk within the post office, which has all of the federal benefits, and then there's this clerk that's a PMR, which is more of a person who doesn't have all of the federal benefits. And Mr. Scheer had been complaining for years and years about the reduction in the number of career clerk hours at the Wanawak Post Office. And in April of 2002, when he's informed that a Miss Preby will be leaving, she's a career clerk, he's complaining and says that Wanawak needs a career clerk. He has some unrelated, some surgery on his knee, and so Ms. Priebe agrees to stay on until July of 2002. And for the rest of that year, Mr. Scheer is complaining about this career clerk, and he still complained about that as of December. And in fact, when he files his EEO filing, you'll see that he says he requests that a PMR from another location be transferred and made into a career clerk at his position.
So in other words, at the time the post office, the postal service, assigns Ms. Kelly to the post, to the Wanawook post office, was it doing so to fulfill his request for more help? Or was it assigning her there as a way of fulfilling his request for an accommodation?
The former, Your Honor. And that is a point that I wanted to make certain that, if it wasn't clear in our brief, would be clear here, is that this case, in a sense, is not really a disability accommodation case. What he is complaining about, Mr. Scheer, is a disagreement regarding the staffing levels here. And if you assume a hypothetical in which Ms. Bischke had said, no, you get no PMR in April, the result in this case would be the same, because it's not a reasonable accommodation to ask for this person. And again, I pulled it out before I came over here this morning, Your Honor, because I do think it's so important. It's page 30 of the Record of Index. And in that letter, Ms. Bischke is talking about making Ms. Kelly available for 4 hours daily while you are receiving medical treatment. She's specifically saying, as a management decision, I'm providing this person to provide medical treatment. She says, I hope your health improves, and as you have filed an EEO claim, in the final paragraph, no further comments are appropriate. Now, she doesn't say that she's drawing a distinction between an ADA claim and a management moving a PMR person over here, but I think that's a fair inference from the letter. So this case is about a person who had a disagreement with management over the proper staffing at a small rural post office and is trying to transform that into an accommodation claim. It is an unreasonable request to require or to ask for this PMR even to be put in place at Wanawook. I did want to clarify one statement in the brief regarding the effect of the Toyota case, if I might. And because there was some discussion of this in the reply brief, and at page 14 of our original brief, we are talking about the summary judgment standards and the standards that apply to ADA claims. And we said that after the Moore decision of this court, and especially in light of the Supreme Court's decision in Toyota, in which the requirements for establishing a qualifying disability were tightened, and then we went on from there. And we were not meaning to suggest in any way, shape, or form that Toyota changed the statutory framework or the Code of Federal Regulations. What we were trying to emphasize was that the Toyota case was telling circuit courts and district courts to apply a rigorous standard in these disability cases, and we were trying to emphasize that a searching inquiry must be made into particular cases on a case-by-case basis to determine whether there is a disability. In particular, in answer somewhat to Judge Williams' inquiry, is in cases like diabetes, where you can have all kinds of different practical effects on a person day-to-day, the courts have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. And so when we were talking about tightening the standards under Toyota, we were not meaning to suggest that it had changed the rules or changed the framework, simply that it was saying that a rigorous analysis and needs to be applied in the ADA framework needs to be, as the court has interpreted, strictly to create a demanding standard. But we were not meaning to say that the standard itself had been changed. Unless there are any further questions, I would just stand on the brief that we previously had submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Elkin. Ms. Dix, I think your time has expired, but you may have a minute if you wish to reply.
Thank you. I just want to speak to the issue of the request for the accommodation and his Mr. Scheer had been requesting and had believed that the reduction of hours in the Wanawook post office was bad for the community, and he had been requesting additional help for the office, not to necessarily extend the hours, but those requests were different when it came time for him to have an accommodation so that he could take care of his diabetes. And I think it's very clear that in December of 2002, and it wasn't years and years and years that he had been asking for additional assistance. He had asked for additional assistance since at most a year prior to that. But it was in December of 2002, when his diabetes took a turn for the worse, that he asked for an accommodation, and at that point his supervisor was under a duty under the Rehabilitation Act to discuss with him what his needs were, and she did not do so.
Thank you, Mr. Elke. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.